It's the snack everybody loves to make, which leads one to ask, who put the pop in popcorn?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. Welcome to the 498th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Wanaka who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I'm Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Jay Cruz on the boards. Hello, Jay.
Word.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phones. Hello, Carol.
Hello.
And producer Molly Chudikoff on the stories. Hello, Molly.
Hello.
Folks, in American Indian folklore, some tribes were said to believe that spirits lived inside each kernel of corn. Some of the spirits were quiet and gentle, but others were angry and volatile. When the kernels housing those spirits were heated, the spirits residing inside would become angrier and angrier and shake the kernels. Then, when the heat became unbearable, the spirits would burst out of their homes and into the air in a disgruntled puff of air. Of course, you and I are way too smart to believe that spirits could animate food. But still, we wonder, who put the pop in popcorn? And who better to ask this wonderful question than Gary Rettenbacher, who is, of course, the grandson of the pop of popcorn, Orville Rettenbacher. Gary, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be here.
Great to have you aboard. Gary, you're an attorney. Business attorney practicing in Santa Cruz and San Francisco, California, right?
That's right.
And the grandson of Orville Rettenbacher himself.
That's correct, too.
And, of course, for those of us who've been living on the North Pole, who was Orville Rettenbacher?
Well, it's been about 10 years since he died now, but, of course, he did come up with the famous hybrid that caused the popcorn revolution.
And most of us, of course, know him because we grew up watching him on TV. And he was the most looking pitchman I have ever seen in my life. It's a wonderful-looking gentleman, slight, wore interesting glasses, had short hair, and always this wonderful demeanor about him. Are you like that, too?
I wouldn't say that I'm just like that, although when I did the ads with him, the advertising people said the reason I was chosen, not because I was smart or well-spoken or anything like that, just because I kind of look like him.
Oh, so and how many different television commercials did you appear in him with, Gary?
We made about 80 together.
80 television commercials. Woo.
Yeah, from the mid-80s through the mid-90s.
Woo. Well, let's start from the beginning here, Gary, and perhaps you can help us. What makes popcorn pop, if not angry spirits?
Oh, that's what I always thought it was.
You too, huh?
I'm
with those Indians. I think it's angry spirits in the popcorn.
Well, it really has to do with the moisture in the kernel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a unique freak of nature that the pericarp of the popcorn, that's the hard outer shell, is just strong enough to hold in that moisture when it starts to get heated. But when the moisture expands and expands, eventually that pericarp cracks and shatters, and then for some reason, the starch inside doesn't fly apart and go all over the place. It stays together. Just a very unique freak of nature.
Well, is popcorn different than other corn, like sweet corn and feed corn and all the other corns that we have?
Right. There's about, I think about five known brands, not brands, but types of corn, mm-hmm. and you hit the three best known ones. The sweet corn, of course, is what we eat around the dinner table. Dent corn or feed corn is the stuff you see usually when you're driving along the Midwest. That there's lots and lots and lots of dent corn
right.
fields. Then, of course, there's popcorn, and that's a unique animal. The way you could tell the difference between that and say dent corn is the dent corn is big, tall, very robust looking corn stalks, and popcorn is frankly kind of wimpy looking.
Ah, and so there's three kinds of corn. So we recognize the difference between these many, I guess, millenniums ago. I guess in looking around and scrounging around for information about popcorn, I guess the first recorded popcorn comes from about, 5,000 years ago?
About that. There's some archaeologists that found some corn in these caves down in Central America, I believe it was. And they actually popped the corn. They figured it was about 5,000 years old, and the corn still popped. I mean, I'd put a little salt on it after 5,000 years, but it popped.
So they found corn kernels from 5,000 years ago. They put it in some hot oil, and it actually popped.
Yeah, I don't know how they went about popping it, but I guess they were buried with... It was in a burial place, so the corn was buried with whoever it was got buried.
Wow. Well, I've been around a long time, so... But take us through a little bit of the history then of your family and where you were raised and whatnot.
Well, it all started in Indiana. That's where Grandpa was born and raised. He likes to say that he was born in Brazil. And, of course, that throws people for a loop. But there's actually a little town in Indiana called Brazil, Indiana. And he'd been around, he grew up on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And he was around agriculture his entire life. He went to Purdue University and studied agriculture. And he just got into agribusiness when he got out of college. Popcorn, eventually he started his own company, an agribusiness company, sold a lot of fertilizer, farm buildings.
Yeah, this guy was, your grandfather was a very successful man.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
before he even started working with popcorn, right?
Yes, he did very, very well. By himself. His business is one of the better-known agribusiness companies in all of northern Indiana. Sells all kinds of stuff, every conceivable type of agricultural item to farmers there throughout Indiana, Ohio, Illinois.
And he also had a farm, and also, which is a great place for city kids to spend their summers, right, Gary?
Yeah. Our city kids would go out to the farm and find out that it's way more work than we had thought.
So what was the farm like? What was Orville Rettenbacher's farm like? Did it have a big red barn?
No. What he did is he actually rented farms to grow the popcorn and the other things. Now, we had a small amount of land that it was actually owned by his company.
Mm-hmm.
But he would rent thousands of acres from different farmers around northern Indiana. So we would go out to all of these different farms that were growing the corn for Grandpa. And we would head through. Now, we would go through. We did own the seed farms, the ones where you're growing the seed.
Right.
And we would go through and do what's called rogue the fields. Have you ever heard of that?
Say again?
Rogue the fields.
Say, what does that mean?
Well, it's...
For those of us who haven't heard it before,
yeah,
like
this
me.
Is everybody's favorite summer job. You had to go through these corn fields and find the corn stalks that were not the same hybrid as the seed you wanted.
You're looking for sports or rogues.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And believe me, if you haven't done this much and you're a teenager, trying to spot the difference between one corn stalk and another is hard.
What would you be looking for?
You generally looked at the tassel. The tassel is what gave it away.
Mm-hmm.
And if it distinguished itself as being some sort of rogue that happened to get into the field, you had to yank it out. Because otherwise it would cross-pollinate your seed and weaken your seed.
Uh-huh.
So fun.
It's kind of like weeding sugar beets, when it gets right down to it for a teenager, right?
Exactly.
Like I was a teenage herbicide, and you were a teenage rogue then.
Yeah.
Rogue buster.
Yeah, we were human herbicides.
And so he had all of this land, and what was he primarily doing? What was he looking for? Was he just growing popcorn? Incidentally, popcorn was called prairie gold. Why was that, Gary?
Now, I had never heard it called prairie gold. I mean, I've heard that since, you know, I'm mm-hmm. an adult, once or twice. But it never caught on. In fact, they tried to change some names, the Popcorn Institute, you know, always looking for different ways to market. But I never heard them utilize prairie gold.
Well, was it a particularly lucrative crop in the Midwest during the 50s, 60s, 70s?
No, it was a commodity. And mm-hmm. that was one of the reasons why Grandpa became so famous, shall we say, because he changed it and moved it from being a commodity to being a gourmet item. And you might even know better than I, Michael. A lot of people say that Grandpa was the first person to move food into the gourmet category.
Ah.
I don't know. But it was definitely a commodity. It was sold by the pound. So really all you were looking at is how much could you generate per acre.
And, of course, what did he call his popcorn?
What did he call his popcorn?
Orville Redenbacher's what?
Orville Redenbacher's gourmet popping corn.
Gourmet popping corn. And, of course, if you want to make any money growing anything or producing anything, you have to figure out how to get it out of the category of being a commodity, which, of course, is what everybody can grow. But if you have something special and unique and can position it in that way, like Orville Redenbacher's gourmet popping corn, then you have a chance to set yourself apart and become something else and become something special. Folks, this is The Food Chain, and we are talking popcorn today. Love to hear what you think. Do you think it's angry spirits that make popcorn pop? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We have Gary Redenbacher, who, of course, was the grandson of the pop of popcorn, Orville Redenbacher. Do stay tuned right back.
Early to bed, early to rise. Can you finish the rest of that old saying? Here's another one Mom used to say to all of us. Eat all of your. If you said vegetables, you're not only healthier, you probably had a very wise and caring mother. How wise? With what we know today about vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants, Mom's wisdom continues to increase in its value. You simply couldn't do better than eating 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. And why not? Don't you want to think smarter, play harder? You will, you know. Your energy level will increase, and you'll just feel stronger, more vital. So make your mom proud. Next time you're at the market, select fresh fruits and vegetables grown right here in California. From baby carrots and red ripe tomatoes to crisp apples, succulent strawberries, and so much more. Be wise. Live well. Eat your 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, California fresh. Learn more on the web at 5aday.com. This message is brought to you by Western Growers Association and its members representing the fresh produce industry of California and Arizona.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. We're talking popcorn, especially. Who put the pop in popcorn? Was it angry spirits like some Native Americans believed, or was it some kind of magic or science or what? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. We've got Gary Redenbacher here, who is the grandson of Orville Redenbacher, who really reinvented the popcorn business and went from being a fertilizer salesperson in Indiana to becoming the king of popcorn. And as a matter of fact, his popcorn, Orville Redenbacher's gourmet popcorn, is the number one selling popcorn in the United States now. Gary, we were talking a little bit about working your way up and into on the grandparents' farm in Indiana, and you were talking about going through and roguing, I guess it is, the sport corn in the fields of corn. But it really was a rogue or a sport or a new hybrid that led to your grandfather becoming very, very famous, was it not? Are you there? Oh, I have to press the stinking button. My fault. There, I gotcha.
I'm back, huh?
You're back.
You're correct. It was quite an effort by Grandpa to get to the special hybrid that popped up bigger and fluffier. Hybridizing is a very unique thing. You have to literally go out and cross-pollinate thousands of little, you know, sub-hybrids, hoping that the thing that will grow will turn out to be a great hybrid. And so you just, cross thousands of them, hoping that one of them will come up. Well, they did that for about 15 years. I don't know how many thousands and thousands of hybrids he crossed. And then one day in the lab, one of these popped up about a 40-to-1 ratio, which average was about 25-to-1. And when they tasted it, it was very tender. It kind of melted in your mouth. And they said, that's it. Eureka, we found it.
How did they go about surveying all of those varieties?
Well, you literally have a little book, and you write down every single cross hybrid, and you tag every single one in the field so you know which one is which. it's an exhaustive process.
And that's why your father rented so many different fields, so he could test so many different hybrids then?
Actually, the rented fields were for growing of the hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
The nursery, as we called it, was only, say, 10, 20 acres. Because you only needed to do, say, 10 stalks of the corn to
right.
be able to test it. So the first 10 stalks would be of one hybrid, the next 10 stalks would be the next hybrid, next 10, et cetera, et cetera.
Did you hand-pollinate everything?
Yes, you actually take a bag and put it over every single cob of corn that you're going to test so that it doesn't get pollinated, cross-pollinated by some other hybrid. So you go around and you're putting bags on thousands of ears of corn.
Phew. Otherwise, you have no way of controlling it. Because
exactly.
that corn, that's promiscuous stuff in the fields, right?
Right. And what you're doing is you're literally taking the pollen, the tassel, from one of the parent strains, say the dad strain. You take it and you shake it onto the ear of corn, which is the female one, so it'll go onto the tassels. And then you cover it with a bag to make sure it doesn't get cross-pollinated by any other foreign pollen.
Wow. So when you test these, did you have to make all of these different popcorns? I mean, did you have to spend all of this time testing, eating popcorn by the millions, I guess?
Yeah, by the millions. It was amazing. We had these little tubes that you would pop them up in, and it was like a huge graduated cylinder that you had in science class,
mm-hmm.
and you just see how much it would pop up on a ratio. 40 to 1, 10 to 1, 26 to 1, whatever it came up to on the tube, we knew, that's the pop ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you do thousands of corn varieties, hoping.
And one popped out, if you'll pardon the pun, as being very special.
Yes. Now, we had a few others that popped out even bigger, but the taste wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
But we had this one that was just amazing, and I was a little kid at the time. It was 1965. But I do remember Grandpa talking about it when we went out there that summer, and he was all excited. He was going to sell it, to all the farmers, thinking it was, going to be rich and famous.
And that's where I would like to make this transition, because your grandfather, at some point along the line, went from being a seed farmer or a seed salesman with respect to his popcorn to actually selling popcorn in his trunk, right? I mean, he was going
yeah.
around selling popcorn in his trunk.
That's exactly right. And, it goes back to something you said before the break, Michael, about him using his name, Orville Redenbacher Gourmet mm-hmm. Popping Corn, to make a statement. He actually didn't want to use that name. He's got a great story about how he came up with that name. He wanted to call it Red Bow Popcorn, red for Redenbacher and bow for Bowman. Charlie Bowman was his partner in business.
Mm-hmm.
But he went to an advertising agency in Chicago, and he said, what should we be doing on the marketing of this? And they took a look at him and said, no, you should be calling it Orville Redenbacher's Gourmet Popping Corn. And he took a look at him and said, wait a minute, it's the same name my mother came up with 50, 60 years ago, but she didn't charge me $10,000.
And so that was really the transition then from selling seed to other farmers.
Right.
To selling popcorn to consumers.
Right. The farmers wouldn't buy it. And the reason was because back then it was a commodity, and this variety was not very robust in the field. It did not yield a lot of bushels per acre.
Ah.
And so the farmers said, forget it. The only thing that people buy are per pound, price per pound.
And that's the world of commodities, and whoever can grow the most for the least wins.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can grow something special and something that stands out. But who started recognizing the potential of this? Your grandfather obviously did. Did he, whip up a package and take it out into the street then?
That's exactly right. And when
this was the world of Jolly Time?
Yes, Jiffy Pop.
Jiffy Pop, yes.
Right. And that
Jolly Times,
part,
Jiffy Pop, right?
Yeah, Jolly Time and Jiffy Pop were the two leading brands that I'm aware of back in the late 60s, early 70s.
And they ruled the roost, and your grandfather's going out and trying to find a niche in this world, right?
Right, and he, just like you said, he literally loaded up jars of popcorn into his trunk and started driving all over the Midwest trying to get people to buy it on a retail level. And he had his first big breakthrough at Marshall's in Chicago, I'm going to guess it's about 1971. And they bought, I don't know how many cases of the popcorn and put it on prominent display that it was this gourmet popping corn. And, of course, nobody ever heard of gourmet popping corn before. But they were giving out samples, and he was there shaking people's hands. And, of course, he had bow tie and glasses. he made all the newspapers.
And yes. So
he was off to the races after that.
And you started, at that time, you started developing television campaigns, too, right? I mean, I think you were the first one to really take popcorn to television.
As far as we know, that's correct. He didn't do it himself. He became very well known regionally for the popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
And then a large food company came calling and said, hey, we'd like to buy your popcorn division.
Ah. And so as long as you were regional, that it made sense to be regional with respect to your marketing.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. But Grandpa was about 60, 65 when it started getting really big. And he didn't have the energy or the resources to bring it national. So that's when Hunt Wesson Foods stepped in. Hunt Wesson Foods says, hey, we can take this thing national. But Orville, you got to stick around. You got to do the advertising and consult for us.
Because you're the man.
Right.
Folks, you're tuned into the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Today we're talking about who put the pop in popcorn. Was it a angry spirit, as some Native Americans believed, or was it people, you know, an Indiana farmer who really put the zing into it? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. We invite you to participate if you so desire today. Have any questions about popcorn? We've got the popcorn man to answer them. Gary Rettenbacher, who is the grandson of Orville Rettenbacher and an eyewitness to the making of Orville Rettenbacher's gourmet popping corn. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, and we will be right back. Please do stay tuned. Welcome back out there. This is The Food Chain. And today, what's eating what is, we're eating popcorn. Who doesn't like to pop popcorn? And in doing so, we always wonder what makes popcorn pop and what makes popcorn pop, the industry of corn pop as well. And to answer those questions, we have with us today Gary Rettenbacher, who is the son. What am I doing? Who is the grandson of Orville Rettenbacher, who is the man who really put the pop in the popcorn. Gary, we were talking a little bit about how an advertising agency helped your grandfather come up with this wonderful name, this wonderful image, this wonderful position in the mind of the popcorn marketplace. And a question popped up, if you'll pardon the pun again, was there such a thing as gourmet back in 1971, or was Gary Rettenbacher, there you go, thank you, Carol, or was Orville Rettenbacher one of the first to really bring this whole notion of gourmet to our mindset?
And that's a great question. We've been told that Grandpa was the first to bring this notion of gourmet from a commodity to a gourmet. But I don't have any real support for that other than people saying that to me anecdotally.
Well, you know, just thinking back to 1971, there probably wasn't that notion, or at least certainly it wasn't as prevalent as it is today. Yet here comes this really interesting looking man on television talking about gourmet popcorn, and it really changed the world.
There were certainly a lot of people that rode on his coattails trying to follow that gourmet theme. And what was interesting to us is we knew how much effort it took to make a gourmet corn.
Mm-hmm.
As we told you, tens of thousands of crosses, bagging every single ear. But we would get people who didn't understand the process, who would steal off with our seed. But if you take the seed and you cross it on itself, it becomes what's called an inbreed, and it doesn't perform as well.
Sure.
And they would take that and then bottle it and then try and pass it off as the same hybrid as ours, you know, on a small scale.
This is a perfect example to talk a little bit about hybrids. And what a hybrid is, of course, is that you take a one parent and from one side of the gene pool and another parent from another side of the gene pool, and you put them together and you get an F1 or a first generation hybrid.
Very good.
And if you take that F1 hybrid, that first generation, and mate it with another F1 hybrid, you get something else, who knows what, right?
That's correct.
So you always have to go back to those original two parents.
Right.
And then what you have to do is you have to go through your cornfield and look for the rogues that pop up too.
Yeah, so you don't pollute it.
Right, so you don't pollute the rest of your field. And this time, in 1971, gourmet popping corn was a whole new... By golly, I think I'm embarrassed enough to remember that and remember that question. What the heck is gourmet popcorn? That's frightening. Another question, what about the advent of microwaves? What impact did microwaves have on the world of popcorn?
That's a very good observation. The gourmet hybrid revolutionized the corn itself. The microwave revolutionized the almighty dollar on the popcorn. Because now, although it was always fun to pop up corn, and in fact, I'm going to diverge here for just a second, Michael. My wife is a science teacher, and sometimes she will pop popcorn in her sixth or seventh grade science class, and a lot of the kids have never seen the corn actually pop.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because all they've ever seen is the microwave. Right. So, but what happened, of course, is that even though it was fun to pop corn on the stove and all that, it's not convenient.
Right.
When microwave came along, suddenly popcorn was not only good, but it was convenient.
And quick.
Yes. And so the almighty dollar, the dollar started flooding in once microwave popcorn was invented.
When was that?
About 1985 is my best guess.
This is right after Orville sold the company, right?
76, 77 was when he sold the company. And then about 1985, the first microwave popcorn came out, but it was not shelf-stable, and it had to be kept in the freezer.
I remember that.
Yeah, and then we came out with the first shelf-stable microwave popcorn, and that really made things take off.
Because you can store them anywhere. What was the difference between an unstable and a stable microwave?
It was the oil that was used. That was used had to be refrigerated or it would go rancid. And then they came out with a stable oil and package. And the thing that revolutionized microwave popcorn had to do with science. They had to figure out a way to take the heat from a microwave and apply that heat evenly to every individual kernel in the package. In order to do that, they had to come up with a thing called a susceptor pad. If you were to tear open the microwave package, and I don't suggest you do this, but you would find a very thin layer of metal-like subject. It would take all of those rays from the microwave, collect them, and then evenly heat all of the kernels and the oil in there, allowing the bag to pop up close to 100% pop.
And that's the magic.
Yeah.
Is to get them all popped. Take us back to a different way of doing things. When you were spending time with your grandfather as a child in those summers, and you popped popcorn, what was that like?
Well, we just caused trouble for popcorn for Grandpa, because what he'd do is he'd give us the old pot on a stove, and you just have a lid, but of course us kids wanted to watch it pop. You couldn't watch it pop if you had a lid on it, so we'd take the lid off, and of course it would be popcorn all over the kitchen. Then Grandpa would run in and say, "What are you doing?"
Of course, when you're drowning in a sea of popcorn, you have to have fun with it too, right?
Absolutely, and we did have fun with that. So we had to be careful that, you know, somebody would distract Grandpa and bring him to one end of the house while we popped the popcorn and got it all over the kitchen.
And he went from, where did he make his great leap then from selling his popcorn out of the trunk of his car to actually going into business and packaging and really getting serious, there must have been some kind of great leap forward there from selling it out of your trunk to, being a number one.
Yeah, I would say the first watershed came, I mentioned it earlier, at Marshall's in Chicago because mm-hmm. it got so much press from that. So we got a whole bunch more orders from other retail outlets following
right.
that. And it kept growing, and more retail outlets started picking it up. And grocery chains would call him, or distributors would call him and say, hey, I'm getting a demand for your stuff. Can you provide it? So it kept on growing like that yeah. regionally.
Well,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, we have to take a quick break here, Gary. But when we get back, I'd really like you to teach us about the marketing of Orville Rettenbacher's gourmet popcorn, because I think you were in a position to see it as few others were, and there is so much to be learned there. Folks, this is The Food Chain, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Please do stay tuned. Well, I guess it's been a long, interesting trip for Gary Rettenbacher from visiting his grandparents' farm in Indiana and ending up as part of the branding of the number one popcorn in the United States. And Gary, some years ago, I guess when I was a kid, I ended up with a job working in a potato chip factory and made a lot of potato chips. And haven't been able to look at one in the eye, as it were, ever since. And you, I don't know, you must have been through about a billion bags of popcorn by now.
Maybe a billion and one.
Billion and one.
Yeah.
So when your family gathers around the fireplace on a cold winter night, do you still bring out the popcorn?
Believe it or not, I still do. Usually it's my wife that pops it up.
Uh-huh.
And when she does, we gather around the twins and we all gather around see who can eat it the fastest. But yeah, I never have grown tired of it. Never.
And there you are. And if anybody has had the opportunity to grow tired of it, I guess it would be Gary Rettenbacher, grandson of Orville Rettenbacher. So what's the best way to enjoy it? Tell us how best to enjoy popcorn as we head off into the sunset here.
I got to say that I still like, we tend to do by microwave, but I like the taste best of the stuff that is popped in a popper, a regular popper, one of the ones, you remember the old stir crazies
yeah.
where a little wire would go around and keep the kernels moving? You
Producer Molly Chudikoff's looking at us with a real puzzled look, having never seen one before. But it actually tastes better when you pop it in a popper, doesn't it?
I like it lightly salted, popped in a popper with the little bit of oil. I think that's the very best popcorn in the world.
Do you think you get a little bit more out of popcorn when you take the time to cook it that way and you have to actually watch it popping and it takes more time, more effort? Do you think it tastes better because you're investing more in getting it?
So there's a psychic benefit, you think?
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly think that I could tell the difference. If you were to take microwave popcorn and you took the pop one from the popper itself, I used to be able to tell the difference even between different brands. I could tell the difference between Orville and Paul Newman and Jolly Time.
There you go.
And I was right about 9 out of 10 times.
There you go, folks. Gary Rettenbacher, the pop and popcorn. Thank you so much for joining us, Gary, and thank you out there for tuning in. Remember, if you didn't get enough of The Food Chain, tune in the streaming at metrofarm.com. Join us next week for show number 499. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.